Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And I'm just so happy to be here today on what I just realized I should have said is the American Tech Network, because this happens as we move into summer. We have these weeks where we end up with a bunch of people not able to show up. Patrice isn't with us because, unfortunately, even though she lives in a country that that has made great strides getting into the new century, they still can't get her internet working. Yeah. Sorry you're not here, Patrice. But here we are in third world United States, and we all have working internet. So the world's a crazy place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyhow, thanks for joining us. It's been a great show this week. We'd like to thank TSO Host for support. No, wait, there's the whole middle part where we talk about things. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, then in that case, let me try a different angle. Ben, how are you?
I am great, Jeff. Nice awesome. Sunny day, and we're doing the Mac Show.
Yep. Yep, we are. And Chuck, how are you?
I am great. I echo Ben's sentiments. We are doing the Mac Show, and that's always fun. So what more can you ask for on a Friday?
Right. Yeah, and it just occurred to me next week, the group that's here, it'll probably be mixed up some because Chuck, you and me and Dave Ginsburg, we will all be at Mac Stock. Mm-hmm. And well, since it'll be Friday, excuse me, and it's early in the day for the United States, we will be on our way to the conference venue from Chicago.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that that cell service is quite adequate to be trying to stream from the back of a Lyft or an Uber or Dave's car. I'm not sure where we'll be.
Right. Yes. Maybe we'll be able to get a cell connection so we can at least make a cameo, or I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully Patrice's internet will be working by then so that there's someone that can actually handle the live stream part. Well, it'll be an adventure. And for us, mm-hmm. It will be doubly so because it will be adventure where we start off by saying road trip. So anyhow, for those of you that that aren't going to be flying to the U.S. for Mac Stock Conference, virtual passes are still available. So you can sign up and watch all of our presentations. So, you know, you can do that. And Ben, we're going to yell road trip for you because you know, since it's not working out that you can be there this year. Yeah.
Jeff, if you remind me to do it, I'll take a screenshot now and then I'll crop it out so we just have Ben's face and mm-hmm. I'll print it out and we'll bring it along just and pretend like he's there.
I think that sounds great.
So it's like the Ben version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Right.
I'm not dead.
Right. Yeah. It's just like Weekend at Bernie's or Weekend at Bernie's, except you're Ben and not Bernie, and you haven't died.
Yeah.
And we don't need to drag your corpse around. Okay, here's a problem that I had with Weekend at Bernie's. I mean, yes, it was a really fun movie. You both facepalmed.
Yeah.
I didn't even tell you what my problem with the movie is yet. anyhow, here's my problem. And it's not that that they're trying to make everyone think that a dead guy is alive. It's that our bodies don't stay easy to work with when we are dead. So the big obvious thing is they were working with his body at the point when rigor mortis should have set in. Now, rigor mortis is not permanent, but they were moving his body around while he should have had rigor mortis. The other thing is lividity never happened. And so lividity, that's when the blood pools at the lowest points in the body. And so that would be relative to whatever position the body is in. And it's because you have no circulation, so the blood just goes to the lowest points. And we never saw any lividity with Bernie. That just really bothered me during the movie.
I think this is called comedic license.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally appreciate what it is. And yet it was still a problem for me. And Bob Beach is concerned about my level of knowledge about dead bodies. And Bob, I would elaborate on that. But that would take the mystery out of our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow.
I'm not sure what it says, though, that all three of us could immediately recognize of all the movies that you could have picked that particular movie and had visceral reactions to it. I think that's either an endorsement or a condemnation. I'm not sure which.
It being people of a certain age.
Yes.
Is that it? Okay. Okay.
People of a certain age. Yep. I'm with you. All right. Well, you know, as long as we're talking about the fine world of entertainment, how about the 54 Emmy Awards for Apple TV content?
Yes.
That left you speechless?
I don't know, speechless. I'm not a big awards guy, but just this really speaks highly of Apple's commitment to quality.
Yeah.
It would have been real easy for them to start up Apple TV and say, okay, you know, we're going to start throwing stuff out there and see what sticks. And instead, they, as usual, were very intentional about it and have continued with that. And it shows with the quality. And it's not just quality in one genre or one area, but it's across the board. And that I think is kind of the most impressive thing about the whole deal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want good quality sci-fi, you got that. You want comedies, they got that. Dramas, they have everything. It's great quality. I mean, as soon as Dave's show was over last night, I went right to my TV to see Foundation Season 2, Episode 1 drop early.
Oh, nice. Nice. Okay, so go ahead.
And I think there's just so many must-sees. Because, I mean, if you talk about the if you're just counting the number of shows we're talking about, you know, Foundation, Silo. I mean, it's basically Apple TV, Star Trek and Star Wars, and a little bit of Marvel sprinkling that, and that's all that people talk about.
Yeah, that seems about right.
And I don't know if you heard this morning or yesterday. I don't know. I heard it on one of the shows this morning that apparently Bob Iger made some statements about how they're going to start pulling back on the funding for Star Wars and Marvel projects, which I mean, it just fascinates me because that would seem to be one of their identifying, I can't think of the word.
It's pillar content. How's that sound?
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's fine. But I was thinking more of just the, oh man, I still can't think of the word. I'll get it. But you just the pillar content will work. And yet you're going to pull back on the funding for that. So what are you going to, I mean, I know that we're in theoretically some kind of weird recession, but you would think that would be where you would be focusing your funding. So yeah, for them to pull back on that, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, not only that, but 70% of Disney's revenue is not related to movies or TV. And if you don't have those properties you can have licensed merchandise from, they might be losing more than they're gaining from cutting back on the funding. Because every time you get a new TV show, well, you can get either new characters in the park or you can get new toys.
I have a hypothesis. And my hypothesis, sadly, assumes that that they're making every choice just based on a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Which is probably exactly what's going on. But when you run the numbers on different shows, and then you run the numbers on what you can do with tax write-offs, there are times when you can take something that you've already invested a lot of money in and ultimately get a better deal on your investment by scaling back or canceling and then using it as part of your tax write-off scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, I believe that's exactly what happened with the Batgirl movie.
Yeah.
Because everyone involved said that they thought it was a really good product, and screenings for it had gone really well, and mm-hmm. then it was canceled.
So, yes, and then they tried to release a couple DC feature films after that, and they completely bombed.
Right, and well, and sadly, the Black Adam movie, that movie I knew was going to bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad saying that, but when they make the DC movies, the likelihood it's going to perform poorly is much greater than if it had been a Marvel movie. And the Black Adam product, that I think that is kind of a hard sell for people that aren't already steeped in that whole part of DC's lore.
Mm-hmm.
And well, and the movie just wasn't done very well. I mean, it had some pretty painful dialogue. Like that movie was bad enough that the only reason I got through it was because Brian Chaffin really, really wanted me to watch it so we could discuss it. And I basically live texted him through the whole movie, and it was a stream of anger.
So basically you had MST 3000.
Brian had his own MST 3000, and he definitely enjoyed the pain that I went through watching that movie. And then the Shazam sequel came out, and that sucked.
Yeah. And then from what I understood, The Flash was quite good, but WB Discovery pretty much lost all their goodwill.
Well, there you go. And then we have go ahead, Chuck.
No, please, Jeff, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to point out that we can look at what DC's doing, what other studios, what other distribution companies are doing, and then look at Apple. And I think it was one of you pointed out that, or might have been Bob Beach in the chat, pointed out that Apple is very specifically going for quality over quantity.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that is absolutely true. The number of shows that Apple releases that just don't work is very, very low. The one that was a surprise cancellation after one season was the actress Arquette, her series. I just totally drew a blank on the name.
Yeah, I know what one you're talking about, but apparently it went so well that we all forgot the name of it.
Yeah, but apparently it was popular, but I guess not popular enough. So what I'm wondering is if TV shows and movies have a much higher bar that they have to get over, when they're on Apple TV Plus. And if the show had been on, say, Amazon Prime, if it had, if it would have been able to go on for at least a couple more seasons.
Well, if it would have been on Netflix, it would have gotten another season, just enough to get you into it, then get canceled.
Right. Yep. That's Netflix's thing. Okay. And see, here's a problem. It gets more difficult to invest your time into a Netflix series because you know that it's going to get canceled after season two. And mm-hmm. Netflix, they have tracked the pattern for years and years and years. You have your buildup of audience in season one. It builds up through season two and then starts dropping off in season three. Doesn't mm-hmm. mean it drops off in tanks. It just means it's not growing the same that it was in the first two seasons. And that's when they kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why they kill the shows. So it's very high desert. Thank you, Bob Beach. High desert. Yes. That's the show that got canceled after one season.
And the one thing mm-hmm. about both DC and Marvel right now is I'm a little concerned, more so Marvel's had such a great run, but they're starting to get just a little cute with the characters to the point that it's becoming distracting, at least for me. And mm-hmm. and maybe I'm just not the target audience anymore. But I just like Ant-Man and the Wasp was just in places a little too cute. And the Flash just a little, but not, that wasn't too bad. But up to that point, I mean, there was always a comedic undertone in places, but it felt like a lower percentage of the places that they were really focusing more on telling the story. And I feel like sometimes now it's starting to get into the one-liner territory. And that just, I think that will turn a lot of audiences off.
Ant-Man, the first Ant-Man, that was intended to be a funny movie.
Yes.
And they played it really well. The sequel was not an Ant-Man movie, even though it had all those characters and it was called Ant-Man and the Wasp. That was some other kind of weird slapstick thing that they just kind of jammed those characters into. And mm-hmm. And actually it was a pretty disappointing movie. And there was a lot of just weird, silly stuff in that movie too. And some of the things that Marvel is doing, they're branching out to reach a wider base, I think. And so some of the products that they're putting out are more lighthearted, and some of them are sticking with that more serious, darker tone.
Yeah.
For example, look at Secret Invasion. There's nothing silly about that at all.
No.
And I mean, like one of the most lighthearted things that they have done in that show, and this is not a spoiler, but there's a point where Nick Fury is having a conversation with someone. And they're having this conversation over a bottle of Old Pappy bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And so Nick Fury is talking about how much he loves Old Pappy. And that the way he does that, I mean, it comes across almost silly, but at the same time, it's totally fitting in with the darker, more serious tone of the rest of the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, because the silliness has a purpose.
There you go. Yeah, thank you. That's it. The silliness in Ant-Man and the Wasp did not have a purpose. It was silly for the sake of silly, and it just I don't think it worked well.
Yeah, because in Secret Invasion, literally Nick Fury is telling the scene partner exactly what he's going to do, but making it sound like a joke, so it's not believable.
Yep, there you go. Yes.
And Ben, you've hit the right word. I said cute, and that's my word. That's not the right word. Silly is the word. Mm-hmm. And that's where I feel like there are. I did not even see the second Shazam movie because the first one just left me completely cold. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay. And I usually will at least try to get a passing glance at some of these things. I wish DC would get away from some of that. And I wish Marvel would get back to it. I said that wrong. I wish DC would get back to it and Marvel would, scale back on it a little bit. And I'm trying to think back to, all the Marvel movies. And some of the TV shows, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that played well, I thought.
Yeah.
WandaVision
yeah.
took me a little while to get into it, but once we got past the setup, then it was very good. And it ended up then being a setup sort of for part of the Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah.
So
then you had, Ms. Marvel, which was definitely made for teenage Generation Zers.
Yes. And recognizing that I'm not the target audience for that, it was a little bit easier to swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ms. Marvel, they had me hooked in the first episode. Now, of course, I also knew the character. But I loved the way they did that character. Because she is a teenager, and they let her be a teenager, and we got to experience what was happening from her perspective, and so I enjoyed that.
I will say I appreciated it a lot more than I liked it. It was very well done. It fed it and matched the character perfectly. But I am just out of that age group.
I think I have a wider range of tastes in this whole genre. So like WandaVision, I was hooked on episode one. And Ms. Marvel, I was hooked on episode one. Secret Wars, I'm hooked on episode one. And there are so many things that they've been... Oh, but Winter Soldier... Falcon and Winter Soldier, that one felt more like a slog to me.
It was my favorite by far.
I mean, I enjoyed it, but there were parts where it felt like it was very strained, like the plot and storytelling was a little too thin or a little too contrived. This ties into exactly what Apple is doing also. They aren't afraid to do different things with their properties to reach a wider audience. So it's okay that I didn't like Falcon and Winter Soldier as much as I liked WandaVision. They're two very different types of storytelling. And you felt Falcon and Winter Soldier is one of the best Marvel properties so far. And that's great. And we're seeing the same thing with Apple TV Plus. And I think that's very smart. You need to be able to appeal to a wider audience to have a higher likelihood of success. And Apple's getting that, Marvel's getting that. DC on television, I think they've done a really good job of, they've done a really good job of finding a target audience and playing to that audience over and over. And in the movies, sometimes they're okay at hitting wider audience, but generally not.
I want to go back to Apple TV in a second, but before I do that, I want to ask both of you, since we're talking about the silliness factor, how did you feel about the Batman?
Go ahead, Ben. I'd love to hear your take first.
I will say this. I went into it having a huge anti-Twilight bias. But I ended up liking both Patterson, Robert, whatever his last name is, Batman. I really liked the completely different take on the Riddler, taking a character who has been extremely silly and making him menacing. And to be perfectly honest, I think if they don't try to make this Batman the DCU Batman, they're going to be having issues.
Yeah, I can see that. All right,
yeah,
so for
I mean,
oh, go ahead, Ben.
I rate him up there with Keaton and Bale.
All right, that's definitely high praise. Yep. All right, Chuck, for me, I went into the movie knowing some of the source material that they had worked with, because this is based loosely on the Batman Year One comic book series. Then as far as Robert Pattinson goes, I didn't have the Twilight bias. I did see the very first Twilight movie, and I'm still angry. I want my money back, and I didn't even have to pay for my ticket. Someone else bought my ticket for me. I mean, that was a Geneva Convention violation. Oh my God. But
yeah, my favorite meme to this day is having the two main characters from Twilight and Blade standing behind them.
Oh, that warms my heart. Yes. Okay. So Robert Pattinson, he's done a lot of other things since then, but it's primarily indie movies. So unless you were paying attention and watching for these not mainstream movies, you wouldn't know that of what he's done outside of the painful Twilight series. And so I knew that he was an actor that could do a lot of really interesting things, and that Twilight was actually the anomaly for him. And so I was looking forward to seeing his portrayal of Batman and Bruce Wayne, and I thought it was a really good movie. So yeah, I liked that one.
I was curious because I went in just praying that they didn't obsess over the origin story again, because we've seen the origin story so many times. It's like, if you don't know it by now, you know, wait 20 years and do another origin story of Batman. But, you know, now let's get on with it. And I felt like this did sort of it touched on the origin story, but it was a completely different take. It felt more like Frank Miller's Batman comic. But yeah, The Dark Knight Returns, you know, that to me is it was dark, it was violent, and it was what I think Batman should be.
Yeah.
In today's world, based on how it's evolved, I don't want to tick off any Adam West fans, but you know, that whole series sort of, I think, did a disservice to Batman and set it back a little bit. So having it, you know, get back to what Batman should be, because even in some of these standalone movies and the Justice League movies, it's just not quite there, not quite dark enough for me.
Yeah, they're having, especially with Batfleck, they're basically having Batman do comic relief.
Yes. Yes. And
okay.
Batman should never do comic relief.
No, I'm with you on that. Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I liked about I love how we've turned this into the comic show this week. One of the things I liked about the Patterson Batman was that he was actually doing detective work, which was one of the key elements in the 1966 Batman series. He was doing detective work, and then he fought when it was necessary. Unlike the more recent Batman properties, where he's just this brutal vigilante and not really doing detective work. I mean, there's a reason why on the masthead on Batman comics, it always said world's greatest detective. and losing that to me was a horrible disservice to the character. I'm a big fan of Adam West's Batman, and while I can appreciate Chuck, you feeling like that might have set the character back some, I think that actually saved the character. And bringing Batman into the mainstream in the way that they did, in a way that could only be done in that time frame. I think it was a really well done series, and what made it work was that instead of just being people going, "Oh, we're campy. Look, we're funny." They played it dead ass serious.
Yeah.
And that made it even funnier and made it really work. But the big thing was, he's a detective. They had the whole crime lab. Every episode, they would have to go into the Batcave and use all their different skills to figure out and solve a mystery. And then they had to fight, of course. But
yeah, and this kind of brought the best elements of the post-89 Batman with the 60s Batman to kind of get that more full version of the character.
Yes. And we did get some of that with Michael Keaton's Batman. After that, then the detective part with subsequent actors, it was just kind of put to the side or implied that he was doing some sort of detective work until we get to Patterson. And now he's actually doing detective work again.
Jeff, that's a really good broad observation that I hadn't thought of. And maybe I'm going to have to consider that a little bit as to how much that played into why I enjoyed that one as much as I did. Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Go ahead.
Well, I want to take this back to Apple TV Apple TV Plus, excuse me, because one thing you said, Jeff, that struck me that I really hadn't thought about or put together in my head, but it's crossed between you and Ben. There have not been like the supplemental revenue streams from any Apple TV show, at least that I'm aware of, as far as merchandising goes.
It's definitely limited.
There is one now.
Yeah, if you go to Apple's store at their main headquarters, you can buy some Ted Lasso merch.
Oh, yes, you're right. Okay, hadn't thought about
that. But that's a very limited thing.
And that's a very different thing than doing action figures and stamping, you know, the Ted Lasso logo on everything in sight. I mean, it feels like it feels tasteful that, you know, if you're that big a fan of it and you want to wear a Richmond shirt, then, you know, great. You'll be part of the in crowd, because it's not some of the tacky stuff that you see come out. It just feels like Apple designed it. Yeah. That, I forgot about that one though. Good point. Really good point.
You know, as much as I want to keep talking about the comic book stuff,
we can talk about TSL host.
Well, I do want to talk about that, but Chuck, you really wanted to talk a little bit about GM and CarPlay. So why don't we hit that real quick before I get all happy and excited about TSL hosts?
Sounds good. We talked about this on Dave's show last night a little bit. And after we shut down, I thought a lot about it. And I mean, just besides our inability to comprehend what GM is thinking, it occurred to me that with CarPlay, you have the option to customize to a limited degree, but it's getting, you know, it's evolving and getting more. You have the opportunity to customize your in-car experience. And that is something that has been grossly missing from the world, except for the gearheads and or the kids who, you know, I mean, when I grew up, right? Okay. But when I grew up, you know, you always customized your car in some way, But usually it was what kind of stereo did you put in, or what kind of speakers, you know, and then there were a few other cosmetic things, but that was usually the big thing. And unless you were going to invest in a third party unit, that customization has largely been lost until CarPlay. And now, and the screens definitely helped along the way, but it feels like now I can set my car up the way I want to. And we talked about CarPlay starting to be able to control the air conditioning in Porsche models. And it feels like, okay, that's just more of an evolution, that this is going to be the new way you can customize your car. You're going to be able to customize the controls within Apple Play, CarPlay. Jeez, I'm tough day today. CarPlay, so that it feels more like your car as opposed to just something that rolled off the assembly line. And I mean, maybe I'm making too much out of it, but I just know, like, I know what apps I want on screen. I know what my screen to look like when I'm driving. And with CarPlay, I can do it. Am I off base?
I don't think you're off base.
No.
From what I've been reading, dealerships are saying that one of the features that people look for in a new car is CarPlay support. And anything that's going to replace CarPlay needs to be better than CarPlay. And they're highly doubting that GM is going to be able to offer an in-car dash experience that is even equal to what CarPlay can offer. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm with you. People like to take ownership of their, at least in the United States, of their in-car experience. And yeah, it's things like what speakers do you have? What trim package inside the car do you have? What in-dash experience are you getting? And that leads people to CarPlay a lot. So taking that away is, to me, it seems like a very myopic decision on GM's part. Mm-hmm. And yes, they're limiting it to just their EVs for now. So they could, I think what they've done is given themselves, whether they intended to or not, an out if they need it. And then later on they can say, well, you know, this is an experiment with EVs and we're always learning and finding new ways to give our customers the best possible experience. And so this is what we're going to do now. And then go back to offering a CarPlay thing. But yeah, I think this is a bad move. And I think you're right. People want that control over their car experience. And this is a big part of it.
Yep. Though I will say this, I think people more that are going to buy the GM EVs are more likely to be in the Apple ecosystem than be in the Google ecosystem.
Yeah, that's very possible.
Why do you conclude that, Ben?
They're generally more affluent because of the price of EVs. And more affluent people tend to be Apple.
So extrapolating, extrapolating out from that, mm-hmm. In support of what you're saying, Ben, using the demographic data that comes out of the podcast world,
mm-hmm.
and which can probably apply to other purchasing areas as well, because that's part of what it's used for. The people that listen to podcasts tend to be more affluent anyhow, and what the overall data tends to show is that you have more iPhone owners that are listening to podcasts, and the people that are listening, who are also the iPhone owners, they mm-hmm. tend to be in that demographic range where they are more likely to be buyers anyhow, and they are more likely to have at least some college education, but probably a much higher level of college education, and they're more likely to have additional disposable income. And so when you put all of that together, that makes your iPhone audience your highest likelihood of being a buyer when you're running ad spots on a podcast. Mm-hmm. These are the people that are buying anyhow. So these are the people that are more likely to be buying new cars too.
Yeah. Plus Ford CEO says 70% of their buyers want CarPlay. And given the statistics of new car buyers, I don't doubt that number.
Yeah, this all just underscores the idea that GM is making a really bad business choice. Mm-hmm. Because they think they're going to be able to convince people to buy subscriptions to their own in-dash experience.
Yeah.
And what gets me, I think I've got this right. Okay. And this is not my usual rants. This is just, I think these are facts, but well, part of them are facts anyway, because if I remember correctly, didn't GM partner with Microsoft at some point for an in-car experience?
Yes, they did. Okay. For their in-car service. I think they still are.
I can't remember. If it fell apart very quietly. Mm-hmm. But you know, but I remember that being in vehicles with that experience, and it was very Microsoft, and it was terrible, especially compared to CarPlay today. Now, I've been recently in a Ford, and I don't know who's doing their if it's in-house or if they've contracted with somebody. But again, it's just like it looks like it was designed by engineers instead of having mm-hmm. any sense of how I want to reach over and, you know, what I might want to do while I'm driving, which mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't, but let's mm-hmm. let's be realistic about it. And, you know, no, obviously no voice control at all. It's limited at CarPlay, but, you know, maybe that I would hope that would get better as we go along. But right now I can easily respond to a text message and never my eyes never leave the road and my hands never leave the wheel. Mm-hmm. Because you do it all through voice. So mm-hmm. If anybody had shown that they had this really great in-dash experience out there to compete with Apple, and I will say this, to be fair, I've not seen what the Android offering is. So if anybody out there wants to rave about that, great, let me know. But there's just nothing that compares to CarPlay for all the functions that we want to do with our entertainment and interactive systems. Mm-hmm. And so GM is just suddenly going to magically appear out of the mist and come up with a competitor? Not very likely.
All right. So the irony of what we're saying right now, if we spin it around, there is a point when the media, industry experts, pundits were all saying, look at all the big players in this space, and how can Apple possibly think that they can just come in here out of the blue and compete in this space, which has happened multiple times, and Apple has been able to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that GM could actually pull this off. I don't think it's likely, because there is no track record at all of car manufacturers creating truly user-friendly experiences in this space.
And I mean, while we're saying GM here, the experience is they're basically paying Google to make an experience for them.
Yeah, which so, gives them more of a chance, I think, of having a better experience than if they were doing it all just in-house. Nonetheless,
but it also favors heavily people who are running Android.
Of course.
Since most of their apps and services will be able to move over.
Mm-hmm.
and think about the usability factor of the Google products that are out there. I mean, do they work? Absolutely, they work. But do you know, are the features accessible? Do they have a decent layout that is intuitive? And that's something you definitely are going to want in a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's still, every time this comes up, I just still shake my head and I'm fascinated at what they think. And I know whoever said it, you know, up to a certain point, the entertainment system was sort of an afterthought. Then there was this period where they went out and the auto industry reached out to Audio Technica and Bose. And so you started seeing advertisements for cars with a Bose sound system, mm-hmm. or, you know, powered by Denon, you know, the big names in audio. So in my mind, that was the auto industry saying, hey, we really don't know what we're doing. We need to go out and partner with people that really do. And now they're coming back and saying, well, Apple, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to make a buck by potentially losing thousands or hundreds or even hundreds of thousands of sales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know who does get it?
TSO Host.
Yes. TSO Host gets it because they figured out what they can do well, and they do it really well, which is provide web hosting and help you buy domain names and make sure that you have the bandwidth you need for streaming. So why do I point out all those things? It's because that's what they are doing for us. TSO Host is giving us the bandwidth we need to live stream shows every single week. They're giving us the hosting space so we have a home for our website. And so we have a place for all of the show recordings to live. So you can watch or listen to episodes whenever you'd like. Without their generous support, we wouldn't be here, because the resources it takes to do all of this, it's beyond what we would be able to manage. And they're just there giving us all the support and the resources we need so we can live stream to you every single week and have a website for you. And it's just wonderful, because it's great to find a company that is as solid as they are and is willing to give back to the community and support a group like British Tech Network. So we really appreciate they're doing that. Now, what we can do to make sure that they know that all of us appreciate what they're doing is hop on social media and thank TSO Hosts for being here to support the British Tech Network. Only takes a minute, super easy to do. Just go do it. And then if it turns out that you've come up with a great idea for a website, well, why not take advantage of TSO Host? Because we are living proof that they do what they do really well. So why not take advantage of that? What you can do is go and use their service and make it super easy to help you find that domain name and get it registered. So get that in your cart. And then get your web hosting package in your cart. And then add the discount code BTN20. And when you add that code in, BTN20, you're going to get 20% off your order. So not only are they being incredibly generous by supporting all of us, they're being even more generous by offering a really great deal for BTN fans so that you can get your website up and running for less. So thank you to TSO Hosts for being here and supporting us. And now, if you were here watching the big show yesterday, you got to watch me fumble through what Patrice does so well, which is tell people about the live chat that we have going on during the shows. And that live chat, that's where we have a discussion in real time with people who are watching or listening. This is where you're going to find all the links to everything that we're talking about when we do our cool things. This is where you'll find the links for the cool things. And so how do you participate in that? Well, the great thing is this is kind of meta right now because I'm talking about this and I'm looking at the live chat and Ben is feeding me the links that I need so that I can act as if I know what I'm talking about. So, all right. So if you want to participate live, what you need to do is go to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. Man, I had to work on my diction for that one. chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And that's where you'll find the live chat. And if you want to use your own IRC client, the info you need is right there too. And then let's say that you're watching or listening to the show after it's already aired. So you're doing the recording or listening to the recording, whatever. You can still get to the chat that we had on that day and on that time. And to do that, you go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And you'll see this this really slick looking calendar. Click on the day for the episode that you're listening to. So today would be July 14th, 2023. And then you'll be able to find the chat for today and see the discussion that was happening and find all of the links. And holy crap, did I get through it?
Yep.
Oh,
it says to me.
Sure balls. Anyhow, it's way better when Patrice does that because she knows what she's doing and she makes it look so easy. So anyhow, all right. So with that, let's hit some cool things. And Ben, you already dropped a cool thing in, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
All right. Whoa. What's up with my studio lights? I feel like right now there should be some grimy trench coat detective that comes in and gets in my face and goes, "Where were you on the night of the 5th? Wow.
Yeah, where were you, Jeff?
I want my attorney. I'm not saying nothing, man. This is a bad rap. All right. Ben, tell us about your cool thing. And
okay,
I don't pretend this, like my lights aren't freaking out on me.
This is kind of your, shall we say, this was a bit a kind of a COVID casualty mm-hmm. of Netflix. It is called The Order. There are two seasons of the show.
Because it's Netflix. That's why there's only two yes. seasons of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. If you kind of like the more adult-like setting that, but kind of the Harry Potter dynamic, you know, like you get from the magicians,
mm-hmm.
Or the, God, what's the other one? Umbrella Academy.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of on that same, you know, that same kind of vibe. It's about students who are part of basically different frats, fraternities that practice magic. However, it has to be done in a way that the magic cannot be known to the outside.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the episode list. This is interesting. It's like each story in the season is mm-hmm. a two-parter.
Yeah.
So like episode one is Hell Week Part 1, episode two is Hell Week Part 2, episode 3 and 4 are Introduction to Ethics Part 1 and 2. It's that way through the whole season. Two-parters.
Yeah.
Interesting model, as opposed to one big story arc, a bunch of little mini story arcs.
Yeah.
But I hadn't even heard of this one before.
Yeah, this is brand new.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good as The Magicians, but it's definitely watchable.
Okay. Well, now it's on my list. Cool. And all right, so Chuck, tell us about your cool thing.
All right, so I will
I'm kind of not
confess.
surprised though. I just clicked the link for your cool thing and I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah, I kind of have to confess that I got hooked by an Amazon Prime Day impulse buy. This got thrown up to me at in the surfing, and it's like, why did I not know this existed? This is a desktop power strip, desk clamp power strip that you can clamp to the side of your desk the way you usually use a mount, like for a studio arm, mic arm, or something like that. And it puts a power strip right beside you. Or the other thing they show, and I'm kind of experimenting with where I like it better, is on a table leg, if you have a wide enough table leg to attach it, so that it doesn't even have to occupy any part of your desk. But it puts a power strip in very easy access. The cable management, therefore, is made a whole lot easier, so you're not just plugging things in all over the place. The particular model, though, that I put in here, each outlet has a switch, an on-off switch, so you can turn things on and off right from your desktop or from your table leg or whatever. And that was great. There are some models out there that had USB ports. Really wasn't anxious to plug my expensive equipment into a USB port for charging that I'm not completely aware of, and know that it's reputable. But here, if I want to charge something, okay, so I plug one of the little power taps into the strip, and then plug the charger in there. So I feel like I've got some protection. But this is just extremely, extremely convenient for those things that seem to move on and off of your desk or your table or wherever, and you're constantly having to either get down on your hands and knees and plug it in, or reach behind something and plug it in awkwardly. And it obviously turns one port into many. So you do it, you clamp it, and then you've got all those ports at your command. Not terribly expensive. I guess I got a little better price than this. It's $26.99, and there's a 15% off coupon as well. The deal was a little better on Amazon shopping, but if you find that things are inconvenient for you to plug in, I'm trying to figure out a way to use these all over the house, because it just feels like this is so easy. It's so well thought out. It's not obtrusive. And I'm just sorry that I didn't know this existed before. So go forth and plug in.
Yep. These are pretty cool. I'm scrolling down the page, and where they show similar products, there's another one that it's like a bunch of outlets on top of the clamp, a bunch of outlets on the bottom of the clamp, but only a single power switch. But still, there's so many options here. But I like this with a switch for each outlet.
Jeff, I like that, and by the way, they make them with fewer outlets too. So if you don't want it to be quite as big on your desk, if let's say maybe you just need one or two or three outlets, that's fine too. But I like the fact that this one didn't have any USB, so I wouldn't be tempted, and B, it wasn't occupying space on my desk that I was never intending to use. So the outlets, I can always use outlets, and so. And so again, for and there's nothing says you couldn't plug something in that is going to remain on your desk for a while. I just really love the idea of having it so that those things that are sort of transitory, I can plug in and do, use, and then take back out and go. So yeah, it's for that kind of money, it's so far it's been a matter of, do I like it better on this side of the desk, or do I like it better on the leg?
Very nice. And yeah, the price was a little bit cheaper on Amazon Prime Days. That's still a good price.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then I guess that brings us to my pick. And I'm quite surprised, because I was certain Ben was going to show up with my pick, and he did not. My pick is season two of Foundation, which Ben pointed out, episode one dropped early. So came out on Thursday night instead of today. And my plan is to make time at some point today to watch episode one of season two. And I thought season one was fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to everything they do in season two. So mm-hmm. Apple TV Plus, Foundation, season two. All right. And with that, it's time to wrap things up. So, Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, you can find me at Ben Raythig on your social network of choice. I believe there's about 20,000 of them now.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find me at raythig.tech on Thursdays. You can find me at In Touch of iOS with Dave Ginsburgs. On Tuesdays, you can find me on Mac Voices with this Chuck Joyner fellow. Then, mm-hmm. of course, Thursday and Friday afternoons here on the British Tech Network.
Awesome. And Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com is the jumping off spot for everything. As Ben said, we do Mac Voices live Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, whatever time that is, wherever you are. On YouTube at youtube.com/MacVoicesTV, where Ben and Jeff and a whole lot of our other friends show up and we examine just about anything that comes down the pike, sort of like this show, only maybe just with a little broader tech focus. And on any of the socials, including Threads, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Thank you, Jeff.
Awesome. Okay. And for me, let's see, social media, Jay Gamut on basically all of them. And where I'm active right now is Mastodon and Instagram. And I am playing around with Threads. And it's ultimately, I think I'm going to end up needing, like what so many of us will, a unified app for managing all of our social media instances. Yeah, that's a market that's just begging for new products. Anyhow,
keep working on it, Icon Factory.
Yes, Icon Factory. If anyone can do it in a really good way, I think it would be Icon Factory. Actually, there's a bunch of people that could do it, but I'd love to see their take. Okay, so then for shows, most Tuesdays, Chuck lets me on Mac Voices Live. And then most Thursdays, I'm on In Touch with iOS, Dave Ginsburg show. By the way, the article links that are in the chat today are all from In Touch with iOS. So Dave, thank you for sharing your show notes so that I didn't have to do any homework. Let's see. Then Thursdays, here on the British Tech Network for the Big Show, then back here on Fridays for the Mac Show. Also, I do the Context Machine with Brian Chaffin, and then other shows along the way too. So with that, thank you for being so awesome and spending part of your morning with me and indulging me in what turned out to be very much a comic book and movie discussion. So that was a fun surprise. So you guys, you rock. And then everyone that's here watching, listening live, participating in the chat, thank you for being here. You are all absolutely awesome. Everyone that watches or listens to the recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love, people, because they deserve it. They're making it possible for us to be here. Hey, Ewan, thank you just for being you. And Mueller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows every week. Your job's going to be kind of rough next week because several of us will be at MacStock. And let's see. So, yeah, I think that's the most important stuff. Don't forget to tune in next Thursday for the Big Show. Then join us again next Friday for the Mac Show. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.